हरिः ॐ प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, 2:18. As the man who digs with a spade into the ground obtains water, even so an obedient pupil obtains the knowledge which lies hidden in his teacher. And so it's through obedience, by taking the instructions, by following them, that's how then one will actually gain knowledge. Right? So that's means this is the end of that whole section on respect, knowledge, study. So through this, that's how you'll get knowledge, is by obedience, service, right? Then there'll be, one will gain that kind of knowledge, right? So hidden means that there's the obvious, but then what's the meanings behind it, everything like this. Because it's not that the teacher has to teach it. It means someone has to be interested, like that. It means, in other words, as we saw before, knowledge said, don't give to someone who's not qualified, who's not interested. So skills you might give, but we see is that giving these, specific knowledge or specific skills, then that's the duty of the upadhyaya, right? But the acharya means that you're giving how to apply those and then the hidden meanings behind that. That's more important. So that can be obtained by someone who's obedient. Otherwise, they can do their duties, but if there's the attitude, then they may not get, like I think it's Gotama's son. That we told this story, no? Like Gotama's son. He had gone to the Gurukul and had grown up. And so then, I think it's Gotama, but in any case, one of the great sages, his son, he went to the Gurukul, and he was very intelligent. And then when he graduated as a snataka, then they were traveling around a bit, going to different programs and that. So the kings have these big yagyas, and they would go to them and that. Because a Brahmin, as a snataka, between when he graduates and when he gets married, then he has that time he can travel a bit and pick up knowledge or experiences that he wouldn't have gotten in the school and may be difficult to get after he's married, right? So they were traveling, they went to the court of one king, and there was discussions about, different subject matters. So when he arrived with, whoever else he was with, then the king, understanding who he was, then he thought, well, his father is such a great, renowned scholar. And so then he also must be similar. So then he asked him about the soul and about transcendence. And the kid didn't know about it. He knew the Vedas, he knew the rituals, he knew the technicalities of it, he knew all those kind of like very technical details. He didn't know about spiritual knowledge. So he became offended. It's like, you're talking about something, that doesn't exist, because he went to school, he's this, he's never heard of it. So he went home afterwards, and then his father was asking, how was this? Father was sitting with a few other sages, and they asked, well, how was this yagya? And he says, oh, this king is very impious. He's insulting to the Brahmins and like that. And the sages were thinking, no, but he's renowned for being very advanced in knowledge and everything and behavior. So they said, well, what was he doing? Why, like that? Well, he was asking all these, we're there, and he's asking, wasting our time asking all kinds of, questions that don't that, you know, don't have any meaning. They said, what were those questions? And so when he repeated what the questions were, then Gotama and the other sages could understand that these are questions you would ask if you were advanced in spiritual knowledge and trying to go deeper. And the questions he was asking were already more advanced than what they knew. So they all, you know, decided, let's go visit the king. Right? So then they all went and collected firewood and went to visit the king, because that's one of the things when one comes. The element of submission here, of becoming a student, is one comes with firewood, you know, for attending the yajna. Because that means you're willing to do service. Right? You just want knowledge, okay, but what are you going to do? So here that you come with wood, you're already ready to. So they came and to the king, and he was asking what he can do, because these are great personalities, and he said, you know, we want to learn from you. He said, why? And then they explained, and that, and he says, you can stay here, you'll be my guests, and whatever I know, I'll teach you, but I won't be your teacher. You know, I'll just explain what I know. You'll be my guests, and we can discuss like that. Because he was the king, and they were great Brahmins. So like that, the point is that knowledge which lies hidden is only through obedience. Otherwise, one can get a lot of knowledge, but one doesn't necessarily get what's hidden unless one is obedient. Right? And hidden means Krishna consciousness. Right? Now, it may be you can get so many things, but the point is if you really get, it depends upon Krishna, because it's Krishna who gives the blessings that we understand Krishna consciousness. We please him through our service attitude, then it works.
Is there any special application in Kali Yuga with the, you know, dharma of charity, where things are given freely even though someone's not so qualified to receive?
Means you can give freely to persons who are not really qualified to receive, but then also the donation is quite small. You know what I'm saying? Because it means you have the responsibility, because money is Lakshmi, it's a potency of the Lord, so you can't give it to just.
I mean, in regards to maybe not so qualified student, but still giving so much knowledge.
It means when you're dealing with transcendence, then, because that's the nature of the soul, but then the point comes is what they'll absorb depends upon means. In other words, you can give that knowledge, but they won't understand it unless they actually, you know, contemplate it, try to apply it. You know, as Prabhupada was talking about, there's the instruction and there's the example. So then when the example matches the instruction, then you could follow that particular example. But otherwise, the principle or the point that's being made is what you're following. So you make your endeavor, but that endeavor, you have to be actually trying to do it to please Krishna. Then Krishna will reveal, because you're learning about Krishna. So as long as you're, you know, in the line, you're trying to do whatever, but then it's a matter of your sincerity is how much you'll gain from it. Right? But in other things, in other words, if someone's not asking, you don't tell. You know what I'm saying? So that's the, you know, like we have a Bhagavatam class, but who comes to Bhagavatam class? Those who want to know. You know, so then it's up to the sincerity of those hearing and how they apply it, how much they'll actually get from it. Does that make sense? But if someone doesn't ask, then better not to tell. Right? Because otherwise, then they may appreciate it, they may not. So that's not the way to work. Okay. Then hair and sleeping, 364. The student may shave his head, keep a sikha on the crown of his head. The sun must never set or rise while he lies asleep in the village. Right? So he may either keep the hair, or all means to never shave anything, you know, so it's matted locks, or he shaves everything. So it depends upon what is the, how do you say? What is your particular sampradaya and all that? So like that. So then shaving the head, keeping the sigha, that's for worshipping the deity. So if that's what's being done, then that's there. So our line is Pancharatra. That's our main line. So therefore, that's our tradition, like that. But in some of them, then they don't shave. But they don't, you know, cut their beard. They don't do anything like that. So, you know, it's not that you leave the hair, keep a little beard, how much you want, you know, put a tattoo, you know, like, no, that doesn't, no. It's that you shave, or, you know, it's all or nothing. There's no pick and choose in between like that. I mean, Grihastha can do that, but that's not Brahmacharya. Like that. By sipping water, he shall daily worship both twilight, and also sun should never rise while he lies asleep. So in other words, he should never sleep through sunrise. Like that. One is that means he missed the Brahma Muhurta, so the best time for spiritual understanding. And two is that through the sandhis like this, that's what also the heat in the body raises. Right? That's it. So that's when you're supposed to be doing spiritual activities, because you keep everything balanced. Otherwise, heat rises means lust rises. So it's like at the sandhis, because it's a mix, it's extreme. So you get one or the other. So it's more material or more spiritual. So that's why the sandhis are always used for spiritual activities. By sipping water, he shall daily worship both twilights with a concentrated mind, in a pure place, muttering the prescribed text according to the rule. Right? So then Achman, and then chanting the Gayatri Mantra, right? And then the undertaking of the yogas and that. So, but notice here is that both twilights, right? So that's the morning and evening, because that's when you do the full ritual. You know, the Achman, calling the Gayatri, doing the meditation and everything like that. Then that's done like that. Does that make sense? But that doesn't mean that the third one's not chanted at noon. It just means you just sit, chant the Gayatri, and that's it. You don't have to do all. If you can, nice, but it's much of the time in the middle of the day, there's other things going on, so it may or may not. If you have the facility, you're taking bath, you can sit, then nice. But otherwise, the full, you know, Sanya Bandhana is done in morning and evening. So noontime is just the mantra. So it's not. It's understood you're chanting three times, but those two times, then it's done more elaborately, right? Does that make sense? So for us, since that's not our japa, the Hare Krishna mantras are japa, so Sandhya Bandhana isn't actually so important. So as they would chant the noon Gayatri, we do all the Gayatris like that. Does that make sense? Someone wanted to chant Sandhya Bandhana, nice, but it shouldn't then get in the way of other things, like you do Sandhya Bandhana instead of Tulsi Puja or something like that. You understand? Like that. You get more out of Tulsi Puja than you will out of Sandhya Bandhana. Okay, 365. If a woman or junior person performing anything leading to happiness, let him diligently practice it, as well as any other permitted act in which his heart finds pleasure. Right? In other words, someone who may or may not be so serious about something, if they do it, then you encourage them. You know, you don't say, oh, that's like let's say you have your 5-year-old kid decides, I'm going to chant 64 rounds. Encourage it. Great. Go for it. You know, like that. Not that, oh, you're small, you can't do that kind of thing. No, you let him do. You know, because he'll either do it or he'll start and do it for a few days and stop. But just that he wanted to do it, he made the endeavor, is a great benefit. Right? So you don't discourage like that. As long as it's not something he you know, is out of the nature of what he should be doing. Like that. But that's the point. Some declare that the chief good consists in acquisition of spiritual merit. In the acquisition of spiritual merit and wealth. Others place it in the gratification of desire and the acquisition of wealth. Others in the acquisition of spiritual merit alone. And others say that the acquisition of wealth alone is the chief good here. But the correct decision that it consists of the aggregate of those three. So some are saying is you're developing wealth and spiritual knowledge, right? And then others is you're getting wealth and gratification of desire. So in other words, some are saying is that it's your you know, how you say, spiritual knowledge and artha. Others it's artha and kama. You know, someone will say, no, it's only spiritual knowledge, and some will say, it's only acquisition of wealth. So you have all these different things. So, but he's pointing out, no, you have to balance all three. Right? Because the point is you have to engage the senses, so that requires a certain amount of facility according to your nature, and then that is, you know, should not get in the way of spiritual. So the spiritual is the prominent. Right? The duly considered verdict is that spiritual progress is the principal focus, and that wealth and sense gratification acquired as appropriate and in a progressive manner that does not interfere with spiritual advancement. But you don't neglect all three. Right? So the brahmachari, then you would see, is there'd be very little on wealth and sense gratification. Just how much he needs. You know, he has an appropriate sized bucket so that he can put the right amount of halava in it so that he will, you know, be properly satisfied, you know, at the Sunday program. Right? So, you know, but not more than that. His bucket should not be bigger, should not be smaller. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. But the others is that there has to be a balance. But one always has to know that the spiritual is the prominent, right? You don't compromise the spiritual for the material. But at the same time, is without addressing the material, one may be distracted from the spiritual. So you have to find what balance actually works. Yes.
I sometimes kind of bribe my mind. Is that what?
Bribe.
Yeah. I mean, it's giving me a hard time.
A bigger bucket or something? Or?
I mean, I didn't want to go into so much detail.
Okay. It is a public forum.
Yeah. Could be. But, I mean, this is what you're talking about. I mean, because
whatever
it's just
works,
giving me a hard time.
Whatever works. No, but the point is that's why there's regulation. Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's say, the brahmachari, see, in the Vedic system would be, he's going through the brahmachari ashram, and either he either has an interest in getting married or not, right? And if he doesn't worry about it, right? But if it's like he is has an inclination towards it, but he knows it's better not to, right? That would be the upakurvana. So then you have a certain time of study in that, and then after that, then you could get married. So the difficulty comes is that if someone's inclined and then he makes the principle, I'll never get, then there's going to be a problem, because then immediately, right now, the mind is disturbed. But if you say, no, we're going to do this for this amount of time, then we'll rethink about it. We'll look at what's to say, okay, right now we may think this and that, but, you know, let us get training, let's get that, and after so many years, then we can reassess it. So the mind will be peaceful for that many years because it knows it has the opportunity that, if that's important, then it could be addressed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's, you know, it's just like you're fasting. Okay, today's a fast day. Okay? Now, then what's the next question?
What's for prasadam tomorrow?
No, but I'm saying...
What time's breakfast?
Yeah, what time's the breakfast? You know what I'm saying? So if you know, if I just say, no, we're just fasting... That's going to be a problem. Right? I say, no, we're fasting till noon, or fasting till moonrise, or fasting until tomorrow morning. You know, then you know what to expect.
Immediately, it's
yes, putting the alarm and all that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's how the Vedic system works: is that you're doing these, but if there's a problem, then here there's a consideration of that, you know. So there's always that aspect. That's the point of regulation, because then it gives you know. Yes.
I just have a question aside from that.
Is it?
It's about
distantly connected.
Well, it was about karma that you made in the previous verse.
Karma.
The flow.
In the previous verse.
Comment.
Oh, comment. Okay, I was just thinking karma. That was yes. Okay.
Mentioning about the example of the 5-year-old who won the event, 64 rounds. What about an 11-year-old who is chanting 16 rounds? But do you think maybe that's too much for them? Because
let them do it how long they do. Because if it's too much, they'll stop anyway. Right. In other words, as long as that focus is there, let it run. Because even if it only runs for a few days, few weeks, even a few months, still, that they had that determination to do that, you know, then that's always good. You know.
Okay.
So that's all. Because there's so many things. Let's say they had, you know, some other kind of thing that they wanted to do, like, you know, they wanted to learn skydiving or something like that. So then they're totally fixed on this and this and that. So then, you know, if you give the facility, then you figure it out. It's one thing I noticed with, like, we had the first time we had the martial arts class back in the, I think it was 84, like that. And Big Brother wasn't watching, but the
you were.
Huh?
You were.
Maybe we had to cut. No, I wasn't. The guy with the white hair at the end. Yeah, so we had the class. There was like over 100 kids in the school. I think 120 kids. So the first day open, who wants to be in it? Everybody. Maybe there were one or two kids that weren't, but everybody wanted to be in it. So everybody's in there and all thinking, yeah, you know, like this, a couple of days will be, you know, something special and this and that. So everybody got in there and there was a little preliminary talk just about the thing, and this and that, what was going on, what they were doing, a little introduction. Then the teacher, you know, the martial arts teacher, because he was a practicing martial artist, he says, okay, now 50 push-ups. You know, the second day, there was, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 kids like that. Already, they dropped out, so many. And then, you know, it continued like that, you know, like that. And then within a couple of days, I forget what it's been so long, but within an extremely short time, days or maximum weeks, it was down to 20 or 30 kids like that. And they were serious, and they stayed through the whole length of the their being in the school, they stayed in that class. Now, if we had, you know, from beginning known that most of those kids couldn't do, and we says you can't do it, then there's always this idea I wanted to, and I never could. And then later on, then when they do go to do it, then even though it's obvious that it doesn't work, they stay at it for so much longer. Like that. I remember one adult student, then when they got into the martial arts, he wasn't actually suited for it, but it took him at least 3 years to figure it out. While the other kids figured it out, you know, within days. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if it's their nature, it will balance and it'll work in. And if they aren't mature enough, then that will stand out. But at least people are willing to do something that they're focused on. And since it is something spiritual, then that's always the nature of the living entity. You know, if it's material, then you can judge that, you know, it doesn't really necessarily match. And then you have to see, as long as it's not going to be a problem for them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you let it run. It's not against, you know, it means chanting Hare Krishna is not against the nature of the living entity or against the nature of the devotee. So then it's there, you know. Does that make sense? And you let it run. And then only if problems come up, then address the problems. Don't throw the problems out before they come up. You know, that. But then, you know, if you don't want to do this or that, or, you know. No, let them come up first. You know, because in this kind of a situation, you know, they're not so experienced. So you just wait. And then it comes up, you know, that they got rounds and it's night, then it's a matter. Now they have to balance whether, you know, the sleeping and you know, the time at the school or whatever duties they're supposed to do, or if they're going to do this, then making it up the next day, or, you know, stuff like that. So it's, in other words, they have to start to see that, you know, if they already have duties in their studies, duties at the home, then it's going to have to be outside that. You know, because that's what the adults are doing, right? They have their services, they have their family life, and then their sadhana, right? So they have to be able to work it in, like that. But the point is if you can already work it in when you're 11, then, you know, when you're 20, it makes it easy, you know? Because I remember is when one family were traveling around. We happened to be in America at somebody's house, and they were traveling around around the world. They were doing a around the world tour, the whole family, and they happened to also be at that house. And the discussion, I was on the side because it was one of those, you know, open plan houses. So, you know, the Swami's over in the corner. You got a few little beads like a curtain, you know, like that. And that's your corner, you know, and the rest of the house is there. So all the ladies are sitting on the other side and they're all talking. And it came up about chanting japa while having kids. And so they all said, because the lady of the house just had a newborn baby. You know, and that, and something came up about chanting, and she was saying it's impossible. All the other ladies saying it's possible, and the lady who was traveling around the world says, "Hey, I had three kids. What do you mean? I chanted my 16 rounds all the time. What do you mean impossible? You just have to know how to prioritize." Because most of the times, oh, this is so much, so you just sit there and vegetate. You know, she was pointing out, no, you could chant instead. And this guy did a thing. So it's going through this. So it's a matter of being able to adjust that because. As such, a lot of adults can't do it. So if one can start to practice that as a child, great. You know, like that. That's does that make sense? Yeah. So the point being made by Manu is that it's always encouraged. You know, let's say, how you say, you know, because here it says like the women are junior person. So here we dealt with the junior person. Let's say the woman is there, she has the household duties, then she has her service in the temple, but then, you know, Guru Maharaj shows up. You know, it's going to be for 2 weeks. So then, you know, they want to do this and that and so many things. But you could look at it and say that's too much. They're not getting proper sleep. They're not getting anything, you know, all the different things like that. But they want to increase their service because it's only for 2 weeks. Right, but somehow or another in the family it always seems like it's eternal, it's forever, it's always going to be like that. So they always get upset that, you know, I'm not getting the attention I normally get, or I don't get the facilities, or they're cooking nice but for Guru Maharaj. Why don't they ever cook nicer like that for me? You know, this, that kind of jazz. So but the point is it's only for the 2 weeks, and then after that it'll just go back to normal. You know, so 50 weeks of, you know, normal, and then 2 weeks of, you know, that extra endeavor. So then that's good, because then you're making an endeavor in something that is beneficial. You know. Does that make sense? You know, so that kind of an element that one wants to encourage. You know, it's not that now you overly make the endeavor or get on their case or not. No, it's that they want to do it, encourage. And if they don't do it, they wouldn't be doing it anyway. So then, you know, it's not that, you know, see, you can't do anything. This, you know, you know what I'm saying? There's no negative reaction. It's just a positive reaction because it's something good, great, you know. And if they are able to maintain it, good. And if not, then because they did it and they had a good experience, then when things kind of come around again, you know, all the planets line up or whatever it is, then they'll try again. But if that first time they were discouraged, then, you know, because I had some free time, you know, and I sat down and was reading Nectar Devotion. And I was almost immediately informed by the temple commander that we don't waste our time doing those things. That what we do is, the Nectar Devotion is telling you to, you know, to do service, so then you should be doing service. If you got time to read, you could be doing some service. So because of that, it was never a natural thing to read like that. But before joining, when I had free time, you know, I'd just read, right? You know, because where I lived, most of the time it rained, so you didn't go out, you know, like that. If I'd grown up in California, then I probably would have been going out more, but whatever. So so it's just something that I would normally do. Then it's so much that you don't do that. So I wouldn't try. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's just something that it's not against the thing. So it's encouraged. Now, if it's you're supposed to be doing some service and you're reading instead, okay, then that's another thing. But if it's like you have your own time and you're chanting or you're reading, then great. Does that make sense? Okay. Right, so in other words, this whole point of this section is to create a balance. Right? Yeah, so satisfaction, like balancing the results of. So in doing anything and to find out what's important, you're trying to make a balance. Like that. Honoring one's superiors. The teacher, the father, the mother, and an elder brother must not be treated with disrespect, especially by a brahmana, though one be grievously offended by them. You know, in other words, the brahmana should be practicing this because he doesn't have those overly emotional distractions that the other varnas might have. So, in other words, this is the standard, and if someone else, but because the modes are more stronger in their nature, they might not do it so well. It happens. But one should still, this is the standard, this is what one strives for. Right? And especially the Brahmin should make a good effort at this because he has the capacity. The teacher, okay, so, right, because the elder brother represents the father. The teacher is the image of Brahman, right? Because he's teaching transcendence. The father, the image of Prajapati, right? So that means the potency of the Prajapatis, you know, from the sons and grandsons of Brahma, that's there in the father, right? Otherwise, how do you have kids? You know, it just means, okay, maybe he's not having Priyavrata or something, but, you know, but still the principle is there. The mother, the image of the earth, right? Because she supports, she nourishes, and she's very tolerant, right? All those socks, right? And an elder brother, the image of oneself. So insulting the elder brother is like insulting yourself, right? So there's a lot of people who are self-insulting, you know, or self-insulting, maybe. That trouble and pain which the parents undergo on the birth of their children cannot be compensated even in 100 years. Right? Because the standard is you're living 100 years. So in 100 years you can't compensate with the trouble that they went through. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's there. Let him always do what is agreeable to those two, and always what may please his teacher. When those three are pleased, he obtains all those rewards which austerities yield. Right? So do what agreeable to those two, mother and father, and always what may please his teacher. Right? Because the mother and father go together, right? They're a couple in that process. And then there's the teacher. So those three. So it's not just those three, it's mother and father and teacher. Does that make sense? Because the moods are different than this, but still do the same thing. Okay. Then there's all kinds of vritti. Okay.
What is here?
Means there's all kinds of nice things here that are very nice, but the problem is your first generation, if they're not Indian, a lot of times there's not a whole lot of value in this. That's why it's been put into small. So it's, in other words, anything in small print has something of value. It's the principle that's important. The detail being explained may not so much apply to us. Right? You know, in other words, like we were seeing before with the brahmachari. If you shave your head and beard means you're not caring about hair and beard. Or if you grow it and don't cut it, it means you don't care either. Because here, then it's matted and all that. So in either case, the principle is you're not worried about your looks, right? You just accept that position that works best for that. So if all, you know, in your system, all you're doing is yagyas living out in the forest, then they might not shave in that because there's not a lot of barbers out there. You know, but if you're doing deity worship or other things like that, then you might be doing that. You know what I'm saying? Or the facility is there. It just depends upon how it works. Right? So obedience to those three is declared to be the best form of austerity. Let them not perform other meritorious acts without their permission. And when it says there, it means three. This should never be taken to be only the parents or only the teacher. Right? As long as they're all connected with the culture. Right? If they're not, then you make adjustments. For they are declared to be the three worlds, right? Burbhuvaswa, they are the principal orders, they are the three Vedas, and they are the three sacred fires, right? So that's the father, forsooth, is stated to be the Garhapatya, the mother, Dakshinagni, and the teacher, the Avavaniya fire. This triad of fires is most venerable. So this is what the Grihastha keeps in his house. The Garhapatya is the householder's undying ancestral fire from which the cooking and sacrificial fires are taken. The Dakshinagni fire is the fire in the southern part of the Yagshala. The avahaniya is the main sacrificial fire. And so you do all these. So in other words, the main ones were all the different varieties of thing, and then the one is the house fire that's always kept going from there. Then that's what you use for starting the main yajna and what you use for cooking. That yajna, that fire is actually the fire that was used in the marriage ceremony. So in the Vedic system, the fire from the marriage yajna, that's then kept in a pot. The grihastha takes it home, and that's what he does his yajnas with. As we'll see later, is that as long as he's married, he's tending that fire. So if his wife happens to die, then all the implements that we've used for that fire, you know, along with her cremation, all that is all burnt like that. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is he's doing those because he's married. Yes.
Just on the respect for the mother, does all the father, does that include the stepmothers, the fathers?
Whoever raises you. In other words, who puts in that trouble? They don't put in the trouble, you know, they're the nasty step parent who doesn't care less about you, then they're not really the one talking about here. You know, the debt that you owe them, you know, might be able to be taken care of in another 30 seconds or something like that, you know. So, but the point, the anxiety that the parents go through in raising you, that's the problem. You know. Okay, he who neglects not those three, even after he's become a household, will conquer the three worlds. And radiant body like a god, he will enjoy bliss in heaven. Right? So just, I mean, that'll elevate you to the heavenly planets. You know. By honoring his mother, he gains this world. By honoring his father, the middle sphere. But by obedience to his teacher, the world of Brahman. Right? Like that. All duties, so in other words, if he takes care of his mother, then facilities here will be proper. Right? You know, the father, then what's beyond that, the more, how you say, metaphysical things, but the Brahman, the spiritual platform, that's obtained by worshipping the teacher. All duties have been fulfilled by him who honors those three, but to him who honors them not, all rites remain fruitless. As long as those three live, so long let him not independently perform any other meritorious acts. Let him always serve them, rejoicing to do what is agreeable and beneficial to them. Right, so these are all what the student or the son does. Later on, it'll be explained what the parents should be doing to deserve that. You know, in other words, he does his obligations, but they also have theirs. Right. So what is agreeable and beneficial? But what is agreeable and beneficial has to be according to what's authorized by Scripture. They want you to do something that's not authorized by Scripture. You're not obliged. You're obliged to do those things that are according to Scripture. That is therefore in line with your duties towards the parents. Does that make sense? He shall inform them of everything that with their consent he may perform in thought, word, or deed for the sake of the next world. By honoring these three, all that ought to be done by man is accomplished. That is clearly the highest duty. Every other act is a subordinate duty. Right? Does that make sense? So we always have to look at this is his obligation. But the mother, father, teacher can't look at this is my right. No, they have to look at what is my obligation. Just as this is not saying his right, because his right is that mother, father, and teacher will be acting and behaving according to Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra. That's his right. And therefore his obligation is like this. So, does that make sense? Because otherwise you can see in reading this, then you see someone else's obligation, and then they're right, you know, just like we were saying before, that one of, you know, the women are submissive to the men. So that is the woman's obligation, but the men don't look at what's their obligation, they look at, that's my right. But it's only your right because of the obligation. You perform the obligation, it's a right. You don't perform the obligation, it's not. If you don't pay the money, it's not yours. You know, so that's the thing. You pay the obligation, then the rights are there. But since you're focusing on obligation, the other's focusing on obligation. You don't have to focus on your rights. They're already taken care of. Acquiring knowledge in times of distress. He who possesses faith may receive pure learning even from a man of lower caste. The highest law even from the lowest, and an excellent wife even from a base family. Even from poison, nectar may be taken. Even from a child, good advice. Even from a foe, a lesson in good conduct. And even from an impure substance, gold. Right? So even from a foe, a lesson in good conduct. So we see that when, what's his name? I think when Duryodhana, not sure when he was dying, then they had, I forget who, they asked to go hear something from him. Like that. So it's not an uncommon. Or Ravana, when he was dying, then also. Then Lakshmana, I think, went to hear something from him. So, because they have, it means the point is that they're an enemy, that doesn't mean that they don't know what they're talking about. You know, so but the point is if it's good, it should be taken. It doesn't matter what its source. If it's not good, it doesn't matter what its source. It's not taken. So then all these. Chanakya Pandit similarly states. Vishad apyamrita grahyam amedhyad api kanchanam. Nishad apyutama jnanam shri ratnam dushkalad api. One would accept nectar even from poison, and gold even from a filthy place. One should accept knowledge even from a low-born person, and a good wife if she comes from a lowly family. Excellent wives, learning of the knowledge of the law and rules of purity, good advice and various arts may be acquired from anybody. It means anybody who has it. Not that, well, I can go out and just learn anything from anywhere. You know, here it says that you can learn from anybody. No, it's saying something that's of value you can gain from anyone. Right? Yes. That or knowledge of what is the proper way to behave and all that. Because you have somebody, let's say, just an example, is that not smoking, you may learn from someone who smokes. Because they know how it's not good. You know, or a person who is a bad person knows the reactions of it, and so he's telling you don't do like that because then you end up like him. It's valuable knowledge, not that, well, you're doing it. No, he's already entangled. Now he's figured out it's not worth it. So he's telling you don't do that. Does that make sense? Yes.
If Chandali, if he's a Vaishnav, then he can be a guru.
You have also that, but this is just even means of course. Means the devotional aspect is there. That's the prominent. But it's even saying just on the material, just like one books distributor was telling me, one day they were out distributing books on the street, but somehow or another they weren't very focused. And then just this lady, you know, not a devotee, just walked up to him and said, you know, if you were more, you know, committed to doing this, it would work better for you. You know, but you're just so not committed, not this and that. And then went away. You know what I'm saying? So that's good advice. You could say, wow, she's a karmi, what does she know? You know, or, I'm just reading books. You know, like that. No, but the point was, you know what I'm saying?
Someone advised Prabhupada to print books rather than just distributing some.
Magazine, yeah. Or the thing where he does the word for word and all that. That was one of, you know, he was showing it and they're looking and appreciating. They said, you should do this. It'll make it more authoritative. So then Prabhupada did. If it's a value, it's taken. If it's not a value, you don't. Okay. But then it also mentions you should take this, but someone who doesn't know the whole Veda, or who doesn't know all the different, all the character things, you only how much until whatever you've learned from them is learned, then you shouldn't continue. You know what I'm saying? Studying with them, because they can't teach you more. Does that make sense? But if they're a qualified person, then that connection can be for the whole life. So that's pointed out here to balance it the other way. Right? Naistika Brahmacharya. But if a student desires to pass his whole life in the teacher's house, he must diligently serve him. Right? So now we're back to someone who is a standard teacher. Right? So now it's getting knowledge was a qualification of the teacher. But if you can't find such a teacher, then you get the knowledge from wherever it is available. Like that. But only as long as the instruction lasts. And then after that, you move on. Right? You know, it's just like, you know, you can learn car mechanics from the car mechanic. like that. But once you've learned what it is you want to learn from that, then you don't hang around, right? Because then he starts talking about all kinds of nonsense, you know, like that. But if a student desires to pass his whole life in the teacher's house, he must diligently serve him until he is freed from this body. Brahman who serves his teacher till the dissolution of his body reaches forthwith the eternal mansion of Brahman. He who knows the sacred law must not present... Okay, so he automatically goes to Brahman. So this can either mean to Brahmaloka, or he comes, attains to the, you know, Brahmajyoti, like that. But generally, from what I understand, it means the Brahmaloka, right? So it means just that one thing. People can do all kinds of others. You can do Agni, you know, Hesesis, horse sacrifices, this, that, so many. You'll never get to Brahmaloka. So this simple thing of just as a celibate student serving the teacher until the end of your life, that you'll just automatically be elevated to there, right? So then one can understand if you do that for Krishna, then, you know, it's a pretty good chance one will go back to Godhead. You know, so it's not a bad thing. Right? It's not. He who knows the sacred law must not present any gift to his teacher before the Samvartana. But when, with the permission of his teacher, he is about to take the final bath, let him procure a present for the venerable man according to his ability. Riti, the final bath is known as Samvartana, or graduation rite. This marks the completion his student years within the Gurukul. It means his time within the Gurukul is finished. Like that. It means he has a vow and that and so. Yes. So a field, you know, in other words, land, gold, a cow, a horse, a parasol, and shoes. Right? So umbrellas and shoes go together. A seat, grain, even vegetables, and thus give pleasure to his teacher. Right? Like, in other words, whatever he has according to his ability. If he has more, he gives more. If he has less, he gives less. A Brahman who thus passes his life as a student without breaking his vow reaches after death the highest abode and will not be born again in this world. Right? So then, you know, that's it. Vritti. In this verse, the highest abode is described as Brahmaloka. Rather than referring to the Lord Brahma's residence within the material world, this actually describes the Vaikuntha Lokas. This same meaning is given in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.39, where it is stated, Grivayam Janalokasya Tapoloka Stanadvayat Murdhabhi Satyalokas Tu Brahmaloka Sanatana. From the forefront of the chest up to the neck of the universal form of the Lord are situated the planetary systems called Janaloka and Tapaloka, whereas Satyaloka, the topmost planetary system, is situated on the head of the form. The spiritual planets, however, are eternal. Purport. Many times in these pages we have discussed the spiritual planets situated beyond the material sky, and the description is corroborated in this verse. The word Sanatana is significant. This very idea of eternity is expressed in the Bhagavad Gita 8.20, where it is said that beyond the material creation is the spiritual sky, where everything is eternal. Sometimes Satyaloka, the planet in which Brahma resides, is also called Brahmaloka. But the Brahmaloka mentioned here is not the same as the Satyaloka planetary system. This Brahmaloka is eternal, whereas the Satyaloka planetary system is not eternal. And to distinguish between the two, the adjective Sanatana has been used in this case. According to, because otherwise you say Brahmaloka, but it says if you'll never take birth in this world again, then that would indicate the spiritual, or at least the Brahmajyoti. Right? According to Srila Jiva Goswami, this Brahmaloka is the loka or abode of Brahman, or the Supreme Lord in the spiritual sky. All the planets are as good as the Lord himself. The Lord is all spirit, and his name, fame, glories, qualities, pastimes, etc. are all non-different from him, because he is absolute. As such, the planets in the kingdom of God are also non-different from him. In those planets, there is no difference between the body and the soul, nor is there any different influence of time as we experience it in the material world. And in addition, to there being no influence of time, the planets in Brahmaloka, due to being spiritual, are never annihilated. All variegatedness in the spiritual planets is also one with the Lord. And therefore, the Vedic aphorism, Ekam, Ekad Vityam, is fully realized in that Sanatana atmosphere of spiritual variegatedness. It means all the variety is still non-different from the Lord. This material world is only a shadow, phantasmagoria, of the spiritual kingdom of the Lord. And because it is a shadow, it is never eternal. The variegatedness in the material world of duality, spirit and matter, cannot be compared to that of the spiritual world, because a poor fund of knowledge. Right? So it's a duality of spirit and matter, because actually, if we understand, as we were discussing before, there's only Brahman. Right? So there's a variety. There's inferior Brahman and superior Brahman. But it's all Brahman. So then there's no duality. Because then it's all one. Right? It's all spiritual. Right? Within spiritual, there's variegatedness, but it's all spiritual. So material means that there's matter and there's spirit. They're different. So when you see like that, that means that the soul is covered by matter. Right? So then it becomes a problem. The variegatedness in the material world of duality, spirit and matter, cannot be compared to that of the spiritual world. Because of a poor fund of knowledge, less intelligent persons sometimes mistake the conditions of the shadow world to be equivalent to those of the spiritual world. And thus they mistake the Lord and his pastimes in the material world to be one with the conditioned souls in their activities. The Lord condemns such less intelligent persons because they just see form. Oh, the Lord does this, so then I can do this. Or I do this, and the Lord does this, so what I'm doing is okay. Or, you know, these kind of. They don't see there's a difference in quality. Bhagavad Gita 9:11. Abhijananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajanato ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Whenever the Lord incarnates, he does so in his full internal potency, Atma Maya, and less intelligent persons mistake him to be one of the material creations. So he's manifesting, doing all these manifestations through his internal potency. Right? So Satchitananda, it's not, you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Srila Sridhar Swami, therefore, rightly commenting on this verse, says that the Brahma Loka mentioned here is Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, which is Sanatana, or eternal, and is therefore not exactly like the material creations described above. The Virat, universal form of the Lord, is an imagination for the material world. It has nothing to do with the spiritual world, or the kingdom of God. Right? So universal form is all the forms, but it's the Lord's potency within those forms that is what we're looking for, that is special. Huh. So back at the beginning. What page is this? A little fatter.
20 pages. 20 or so.
Oh, it started at 41. Oh, okay. Because I was looking, wow, 61. The other one's only 40. At this okay. Okay. Okay, so now we've done how Lord Vishnu is the source of the sacred law, and now we've done in Ashram Dharma, now we've dealt with the sacraments and the Brahmacharya Ashram. That's chapter 2. So now we move on to chapter 3, which is module 4, the Grihastha Ashram. So the Grihastha Ashram will actually go through 3, 4, and 5, so 3 chapters. Okay. So now, so discourse 3. So this is the third discourse, right? So Bhrigu is now this next one. Grihastha Ashram, topic 5, right? Because we mentioned there's 20, 25 topics. in the Manusamhita, so now we're on topic 5. The vow of studying the three Vedas under a teacher must be kept for 36 years, or for half that time, or for a quarter, or until the student has perfectly learnt them. Like a standard would be three Vedas, those 36 years, right? 12 years per Veda, right? You've studied the three Vedas, right? That would be, you know, standard. So if you can't do that, then, you know, okay, then half that time, 18 years, or, you know, in other words, what it is you would be able to do. A student who has studied in due order the three Vedas, or two, or even one only. Right here it's like even one only. You study three, of course, but even if you study the one, okay, you know. Without breaking the rules of studentship, shall enter the order of householders. Right. So now Manu is making the point: is one who has properly studied his Veda, without breaking his vow. You know, properly he's committed to the service of the teacher and to study. He's completed that. He's qualified to enter into the order of householders, right? So here is the basis of first class brahmachari makes first class grihastha. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, that's where this is coming from. Oh, that's the breathing. Yeah. Sorry.
So there's the titles, Trivedi,
Dvivedi,
so on.
Yes. So some study, they also study Atharva. You know, but it's small, but it's still. But still, to learn it is 5 or 6 years, you know, to memorize it. Like that. Rig's the biggest, so it takes the longest. Then Yajur, then Sama, and then Tara.
And whichever one is studied first, does that depend upon the line you're coming in?
I would expect that that means, in other words, which one you do your samskars from is your particular line. Though you may learn other Vedas for different things, but one of them will be what you do your samskars from. You know, like for us, it's Samaveda. Our line was Sama. Lord Chaitanya was Samaveda. So we use that line. That's
four Vedas are connected with four sampradayas.
Four Vedas, four sampradayas? Not necessarily. I haven't heard that, but you do see a prominence. It means the Gaudiyas are Samaved, Shris are predominantly Yajur, though you have all the other Vedas also. And I think the Madhvas are more Rig. But, you know, I think it depends on the family line. But I haven't heard that the Nimbarkas or the Vishnuswami lines are Atharva Vedas, though one of the main places where Atharva Veda is still studied is Gujarat. You know, but I never heard that, but it is kind of interesting that there is a general tendency. He was famous for the strict performance of his duties and has received his heritage, the Veda, from his father, and is so inclined, shall be honored sitting on a couch and adorned with a garland, with a present of a cow and the honey mixture. Right. So, in other words, he's received the Veda, and if he's so inclined to get married, then he graduates. But if he's received the Veda and he's not inclined, then it was like the last point that was made. It's the Naistika Brahmachari. That was the last point. So then after that is then who is going to get married. Then that's there. So now we're discussing that specific. The other one is it could be done. In other words, you don't give... You don't give a dakshin to your teacher, you know, until, you know, you've graduated, like that. So then, if he's going to graduate, then that's the next discussion. So that's here. Riti. As a preliminary for the graduation ceremony, this verse describes one who is to be considered highly learned. Such a person has a combination of good character and academic proficiency. This is indicated by the statement they are famous for the performance of duties and have also inherited the Veda. Right? In other words, their character and their service attitude is good, and they've studied the Veda, so they have the knowledge. So that's what Prabhupada mentions, the nectar devotion is highly learned. Right? You have knowledge and character. If such a student is inclined towards entering household life, then they shall be honored by the performance of the Samavartana rite. Okay, that's topic 5. Okay, topic 6. the law of marriage. This is a little bigger. Having bathed means having gone through the Samavartana rite with the permission of his teacher, and performed according to the rule the Samavartana rite on return, the rite on returning home. A twice-born man shall marry a wife of equal nature who is endowed with auspiciousness. Right? A wife of equal nature means whatever his nature. He's a Brahmin, he marries a Brahmin. He's a Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Vaishya, like this. So that's the meaning. So some will say a woman doesn't have her own nature. Right? She takes on the nature, whatever is the nature of the husband. But that's actually wrong. No. She has her own nature, but whatever it is, it doesn't matter. She takes on the social status of her husband. Right? Because in this case, being a Brahmin is his occupational duty. That's his status in the society. Right? Does that make sense? But it's not that she doesn't have a Brahminical nature, meaning the ashram side. So in other words, who is performing the ashram duties from a Brahminical Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra nature? You understand? So the woman does have that. Otherwise, why is this mentioned? You know? The other thing is true. She'll take on the social status. But that doesn't mean her nature changes. That's the problem. That's why you want equal nature. Because otherwise, let's say, if it's mixed, then there's going to be a difference in how they want to see things done. And so, how will you ever work those things out? He's a Brahmin, he's very clean, she's not, so she's not. Or the other way around. You know what I'm saying? So it's not going to work out. Because marriage is working on the principle of what's compatible. Because companionship is the basic fundamental principle. Right? Because from there, you work together. In other words, if they're not friends, how is it going to last? You know what I'm saying? That's the point.
That's why they match the birth chart.
That's right. That's one way of telling. The birth chart's a way of doing it. So that's one of the elements. Because you match the charts, so the greater the compatibility, then, you know, minimum is 50%. But the point is the lower it is, then it means there's more need of being able to function on duty. Right? It means this is what you're supposed to do, whether you like it or not. So that means a humility, tolerance, respect for the others, not looking for any respect for themselves, must be greater. You know what I'm saying? So the lower the compatibility, the higher the inherent nature of the person has to be. Right? Now you can imagine if the chart is higher in compatibility and they have that dutiful nature, it'll work really well. Because even if you have the topmost, which I understand is 92%, you can't get better than 92. There's no 100%. There's 92%. You know, there's always some difference. So, but still, that's what you have to work with. So, if it's, but you have to do the work. Just like, I can put somebody in a 5-star kitchen. Everything that's there, it just means whatever you would ever desire in cooking, it's there. But it doesn't mean they'll cook well. It's not the kitchen that makes it. It's what you can do with the kitchen. But some people think, oh, the charts are, you know, 80-something percent, so that's really good, so we'll have no problem. No, you still have to work. It just means you'll have less problems. But the point is even the smallest thing can turn into, you know what I'm saying, insanity. I think it was, forget where it was. I don't know if it was in America or some other country, that a pig from one side of the, means, you know, you always have a point where the two countries meet, and much of the time that's a rural area, right? Unless it's Germany, of course, that has barbed wires and stuff like that. But if it's anywhere else, it's just a field, right? So a pig ran from one side to the other, and then something happened about getting it back, and it turned into a war between the two countries.
I thought it's Israel and the other. That's what someone told me, but I'm not really
pig?
Sure. Something like that.
No, we won't make any comment.
No.
They don't eat pigs.
Pig or goat or something like that.
That's been going on for 4,000 years. You don't have to worry about this. It was like God gave them the land, but the other people are already living there, so it's always going to be a problem. So that's a 4,000-year-old conflict. So there's just anything to start a fight. But what the point is that, yeah, but in any case, even though the smallest thing will start, you know, a whole riot. So that's the point, is one has to be very careful. So that's why equal nature is important. So Vritti, having bathed indicates having sprinkled with water during the Samavartana, right, because he sprinkles with water. And so then that's then means he's now graduated. The samskar signifies the completion of the student's vows of brahmacharya. Importance is placed on marrying a wife of equal nature, as the combination of parents having similar inclinations will more effectively produce children with a clearly defined nature. Furthermore, verses 3:15 states, twice-born men who in their folly wed shudras soon degrade their families and their children to their state of shudras. Because the child's going to be according to the nature of the parents. Right? So varna shankara means mixed nature. So if the parents are two different natures, then there's every chance that the child will be of mixed nature. Does that make sense? So therefore, the parent may be able to do their particular duty nicely, but their child will have a mixed nature. So how does he work it out? You know, the father's a businessman, the mother's a Brahmin. So he likes puja, likes being around the temple, but, you know, he's got that, you know, wanderlust and, you know, likes to wheel and deal. So he's worked it out. He'll go on, what do you call that? What's that program that they do in America? They go around and do all the Ratha Yatras.
Festival
of India. So he'll go on Festival of India. So it's spiritual, like his mother's nature. But he'll take a lot of stuff with him and sell it, you know, to all the people who come to the festival. So, you know, he worked it out. Okay. But, you know, it's a problem. It's a problem.
This verse also, this last statement also relates to devotees who are getting married with non-devotees? Because there's an incompatibility.
The point is why are they getting married? You know what I'm saying? Compatibility of genitals is not enough to hold a marriage together. You know, it's just not enough. You know, it's one out of, I think, depending on how you do it, eight.
Another poster.
Huh?
Another poster.
Another poster. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that would be a real shocker, that one. You understand? So why? I know of one couple in, I think they were in England, and he was telling me that his wife wasn't a devotee, but she was very favorable to the devotees. I don't think she ever like took up chanting and all that. But sometimes something had gone wrong, maybe he lost his job, something happened and he was really like in the modes. And then it had been going on for some weeks or something or months like that. And then she just came one day and says, I married a devotee who was a nice person and that. I didn't marry this, you know, such a, you know, badly behaved, uncultured person. So then he just, oh, okay, and then got it together. And then he was back at the temple and doing everything again and like that. So you might have that because the wife is religious, so it can work. You know, so sometimes you have, but that wouldn't be necessarily your first choice. It's one thing if that they were married and not devotees, then they become devotees, but only one being serious, the other one's not so much. So it works out. Like you see in China, you know, they have their, you know, in the house their little Buddha temple, and then they have little Krishna temple. So then when the wife makes the offering, she makes them, and you both, like that, you know. So he couldn't care less about Krishna consciousness as long as, you know, he gets his noodles and everything's fine. You know? Yeah, basically. Parasara Muni and Satyavati.
She was from fisherman's family.
She was from fisherman's family. She was actually from the fisherman's family, or she was a fisherman's friend? You don't know these things. So the point is it original or not? You've heard something. No, she is the daughter of, what was his name? He goes back, Santanu. Not Santanu, before Santanu. Who? Yeah, Upari Vasu. He has another name. But he pleased the demigods and they gave him a crystal chariot. So he'd fly in the sky, but you can't see the chariot, so you just see him going. like that. And because, you know, he had this chariot, he spent a lot, all his free time flying around the universe. You know? So he was called Upari Charm. He only stayed up, you know, like that. So she was his daughter. But she ended up in that family of the fishermen, somehow or another. Right? Because the fishermen found her. The king could understand, so there was a boy and a girl. He kept the boy, and he gave the fisherman the girl. So that's why she fits so well into the queenly duties, because she actually was a queen. Right? Does that make sense? So Brahmas and Kshatriyas is not such a far... You have many instances of that, but you do see sometimes this problem. Like Yayati, right? He had two wives. One was Brahmin, one was Kshatriya. So all the Brahmin sons weren't complying with his wishes. So it was the son born of the Kshatriya woman, because then it's equal nature, then he complied. So Puru was of Sarmishta, but the other three were Devayana. So it sometimes works out, sometimes doesn't. You know, Suta means Kshatriya father, Brahmin mother. So this is the opposite. So this one is, if you do that, you get a Kshatriya. That will read that. That's like, I think, 10th or 11th chapter, I think. But if a Brahmin man marries a Kshatriya woman, it doesn't. You don't get a new something new. You get a Kshatriya. Kshatriya Vaishya, you get a Vaishya, Vaishya Shudra, you get a Shudra. But if you reverse them, you get a new species. So Kshatriya with the Vaishya, Brahman, you get a Suta. Right? So they're very intelligent, practical, but at the same time as it could be used otherwise. A Suta could be a Brahman, could be a Kshatriya, could be a charioteer, right? You know, like Karna was under, what's this, Adirata? This is, you know, his father who he was with. He was a charioteer. They were suttas. Or they can be a trapper of small animals. You know, so you have those basically four ashram, four occupations. Does that make sense? Yeah. A damsel who is neither... Oh. Okay. So we'll get into this on Monday. So now this gets... Now we get into the fun. Okay, so we'll get into that on Monday then.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janita Gaur Premanandi.